Welcome to The Smart Life, a podcast from Beacon Agency that explores the latest in smart home and Internet of Things technology. I'm your host, Sophie, and I'm the content director here at Beacon. Each week, I'm joined by some of the biggest thought leaders in smart tech, here to unpick the challenges and opportunities faced by the industry as we endeavour to make the world of smart tech just that little bit more human. Today, I am joined by Adam Williams, a commercial executive with over 25 years' experience in delivering growth for new technology businesses across the UK and Europe. From a background with global companies including Samsung and Sony, he has broad expertise in the connected home space, including SmartThings, Enjoy Technology, Lightwave, and Mila. Adam also has a long-standing involvement with the Smart Homes and Buildings Association and is a board trustee of the Electrical Safety Board. In his current role as CEO of Hero Labs, Adam is helping to shape smart water management for a more sustainable future. Throughout his whole career, the common theme in Adam's approach has been an abiding passion for enabling technology that positively impacts on the way we live, making him the perfect guest to talk to me today. Adam Williams, welcome to The Smart Life.
Well, thank you very much, and what a nice introduction. Thank you.
What is it about smart technology that's captured your attention for so long?
I've been in consumer technology my whole career, my whole adult life. And I think the real tipping point was when I was at Samsung. I was part of the team involved in onboarding SmartThings, you know, when Samsung acquired SmartThings around eight or 9 years ago. And by engaging with SmartThings and with that team and looking at Samsung's vision for the time, for IoT to be integrated into, you know, every product and every device, I could see the real potential of how this, you know, this sort of detached concept of IoT, what does Internet of Things even mean? You know, how it would be the glue that brought together other technologies to deliver, I know it's an old cliche to say, a greater than the sum of the parts thing, but I could really see the potential in that. But actually, you know, my other realization fairly on is that there's no such thing as a smart home. It's an idea, because every single home you would walk into in this country and every single occupant of that home is different. They have different needs. The home has different wiring, piping, room sizes, layouts. The walls are made of, you know, 17 different types of material. So the concept of a smart home is one that, you know, there aren't 28 million. There isn't one smart home solution. Yeah. There are 28 million for this country, right?
Yeah.
Because there's that many homes and everyone is different. Yeah.
I love that.
So that's what captures my attention, is how on earth do you solve a challenge like that? Yeah. Yeah.
Can you remember early on? I mean, it's obviously something, a passion that runs deep with you. Can you remember the first bit of tech that left a lasting impression on you?
Not without giving away my age, no. so thanks for that. I'm going to say ChatGPT so that I sound young and cool.
No.
And we'll come on to this later about my favourite definition of technology from Douglas Adams, but I think I'll save that for later. But
okay.
No, when I was like 9 or 10 years old, my mum, who's always been much, you know, more visionary and far thinking than me, turned up at home one day with a BBC Micro B. And anybody who's old enough to know what that was, it was one of the early computers, before the so-called PC, before Bill Gates, before Microsoft, before any of that. And it had 32 kilobytes of RAM, of operating memory, 32K, right?
Wow.
And this thing, you know, I learned BBC Basic coding language, which I mean, even the title, you know, it is like, this stuff's basic, right? This was before Python was even an idea, or, you know, C++. And I learned to write games, really basic ones, bat and ball, you know, stuff like that. I learned to write games, and it was just absolutely fascinating, and the potential for that. And it's gone from that very, very fundamental basic understanding of, you know, of technology at that very early stage, I guess. And it has less lasting impression on me. I don't pretend to understand edge or cloud or, you know, these other platforms, AWS and these other cloud solutions. But at its core, is information processing, and how that manifests itself in every corner of our lives. Yeah.
Thank God for visionary mums.
Absolutely.
We'll come back to tech interaction at different stages of life, because I know there's more to be said to this. You alluded to your favourite quote from your favourite author. But when we have spoken in the past, and I confessed, I have to hold my hands up, my position as being not the most natural of techies or early adopters, we talked about the idea that technology is only as good as the value that humanity can extract from it. Can we talk about that? What did you mean by that?
I passionately believe, I've been weirdly for 20 odd years of my career now, an almost reluctant and resistant member of the tech community, because I'm constantly frustrated by the gap between what technology can do and the actual experience people get from it. There are two great broken promises, you know, with technology in general. First is that it automatically makes life easier. And second, that it works. We all know the frustration of being made to feel stupid by technology that's supposed to make life easier.
Yeah, especially when it has one job.
You've got one job. So, you know, to me, good tech is when it in the background, it makes something better. It takes a pain point away, and it makes something better than it was without it. If it provides an extra layer of interface or an extra layer of complexity or a barrier to the solution, then it's actually worse than not being there. That's the test for me of tech. Yeah. It provides a benefit by its existence for people who are not techies. And I'll come on to more of that, I think, later on about, you know, the way technology forces people to deal with it on its own terms rather than on human terms. So the reason why I'm passionate about the technology industry is, how do we turn that shift, that equation, into one where the human is in control and the user experience is one, is like the technology is not even there. It's not that it's not even there, but that it's adding a layer of enhancement, a layer of benefit, not another layer of things to figure out and get through in order to get a solution to a problem. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Totally. And
so I'm right there with you. Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm right there with you when you say you're not naturally a techie. I don't think you need to be.
Yeah.
I think there are early adopters who enjoy the challenge and they enjoy the satisfaction of mastering technology. The early adopters are less than a few percent of the whole population. The rest of us, myself included, want the technology to do the job for us. That's the point.
Yeah. Yep. I love that idea of putting the human experience at the heart of it, as you know, something we talk a lot. Have you seen that perception or that priority change, or do you think it's always been central to the industry? How much have you seen the rate of change in smart technology specifically with regards to this idea of sort of humanity at the heart?
Again, I think I'm a bit controversial and a bit of a renegade because my reaction is counterintuitive, because the obvious answer to that is, oh, yes, you know, it's an exponential acceleration and, you know, there's a whole wave of industry 4.0 going to come from AI. And, you know, that's the stock answer. And I agree with all of that. But actually, there's always a lag between, you know, the rate of uptake of technology is a function of human acceptance of it. You know, you don't change the world with technology. You change the world with humans embracing and applying technology. And so, you know, my actual favorite quote, my second one, I'll talk about later, Douglas Adams, but my actual favorite quote is William Gibson. In 1996, he said, "The future's already here. It's just unevenly distributed." And I absolutely love that, because it's in solving the uneven distribution of technology that you move the world forward. It's by finding applications and solutions where, you know, it achieves greater adoption by manufacturers, by installers, by retailers in their job in educating consumers, and by consumers themselves. So I think that we could do better to, the more we study that, rather than can we get the resolution of a television from, you know, 720p to 2K to 4K to 8K, You know, those things are all great developments and leaps forward, but sometimes they leave the consumer behind. We all want bigger numbers, faster speeds and feeds, but to what end? What's the benefit? So what I've observed is that while technology gets smarter, adoption takes time and sometimes more time. It actually slows down because the end users and those who serve them, like installers or retailers, have to adjust to an increasingly complex ecosystem of, you know, technologies trying to work together. Mm-hmm. That's the great barrier that determines the speed of uptake and we're seeing electricians and plumbers only now really starting to own the problem and the solution in recommending these technologies to their customers at a mass scale. And, you know, I take my hat off to brands like Ring. And this is a bit of a plug for Beacon, because I know that you guys did a great job in helping them bring the education piece forward with installers with their Ring Pro scheme. So,
yeah.
But that, you know, that's not the reason why I picked them, because they've really invested in educating the industry, educating the trade, giving people the confidence that smart technology isn't some detached separate thing that your average plumber or your average electrician can't get their head around. It's just the next thing in the evolution of the products that they and the technologies that they would install, right the way from the invention of the pipe all the way through to now, you know. And now you can see the light go. You know, when I was at Lightwave, we created Lightwave Pro, and I joined a lot of the training sessions, and you could see these electricians come in and kind of go, what's all this nonsense about? And there'd be this moment where you'd see the light go on in their head, and they'd kind of go, pardon the pun, and they'd kind of go, this stuff really isn't that complicated. And I'm like, no, it's really not. And actually, they'd then be telling us, we'd be learning from them about how this technology could be implemented into the home and what it was we needed to do as manufacturers to make it easier for the customer and easier for them to, you know, serve their customers. And so I'd argue that today Lightwave learns as much from their network of installers as their installers learn from Lightwave. And
yeah.
That's when you know you're getting it right, when you're working in partnership with the industry. Sorry for such a long and waffly response.
For a long response. I love it. I mean, I suppose that perception, the change in perception, not only in the consumer, but in the people that are enabling the connection with the consumer, the installers and stuff like you say, that's been such a change. Yeah. And I suppose educating them and helping them evolve that perception is one of the challenges that the industry has faced and continues to face.
Yeah.
What do you think are some of the biggest challenges in the industry, but also some of the biggest opportunities?
It's a great question. I think I'd pull out a few things, if I may. The first is, the industry needs to adjust constantly as smart technology shifts the very definitions of, let's call them, categories. You know, the good old days. Not that I think there was ever a golden or nostalgic period. It's easy to look back, but I was there when I am old enough to be there when the internet got invented and this thing called Amazon came along and everybody absolutely freaked out. Like, oh, you know, and now we have amazing omnichannel retailers like Currys and all the rest of it who balance the need for, you know, providing a customer experience, etc. But within that, there's been a fundamental paradigm shift in what is a category. You know, is there a television category or is there a whole home entertainment ecosystem that involves mobile devices? Well, of course there is. You know, how do you educate the customer and guide the customer to make great choices in that? You know, it's true in every other part. You know, there's fridges and dishwashers and washing machines and all the rest of it. They sound very boring. You know, I once heard these called the sugar cube farms. You know, when you go into a big retailer and there's all these white boxes, but you know, people don't want white boxes. They want amazing meals. They want social experiences with their family. They're trying to get a great kitchen. And smart technology is as relevant in that as it is in the home entertainment environment. But how do you tell that story? So, so the first one is, to me, smart technology is not a category. But in the early days, it was treated as a category. So both the greatest challenge for the industry is to define how to tell the story. The greatest opportunity is to then bring that story to life for consumers. I think the second one is, and obviously the really huge one, and in this lies, you know, the great challenge to date, but the great opportunity going forward, is interoperability.
Yeah.
Consumers just don't buy into something where they need 7 different apps to manage a smart doorbell and a smart door lock and a a smart water control system like we offer, etc. They want the benefit. They do need different apps because they want the benefits that all of those different technologies provide.
Yeah.
But devices need to work, and they need to work together. You wouldn't buy a house that's got electrical systems that operate on different voltages. That means you can't plug things from one side of your house into the other side of the house. It's the same with technology. It needs to surface and work in the right way. And at Hero Labs, we're very collaborative with building management systems and other platforms that offer consumers the choice about how to integrate this technology more seamlessly. The emergence of protocols, standardizations like Matter, and the fact that it's backed by the world's biggest technology brands are extremely important to give the consumer confidence that they're able to buy into an ecosystem that won't be obsolete in a few years. That's absolutely huge. The last point I think I'd make to this question is, obviously I've got to at some point give a nod towards, what's coming down the rails in terms of AI and machine learning.
Yeah.
Everybody's, all over ChatGPT at the moment, and that is profound, but it's the tip of the iceberg. Artificial intelligence in itself and machine learning in general will transform the benefits of smart technology on a level where, to quote Jeff Bezos, we're not even at the end of the first day of this industrial revolution. And it's a societal revolution as well. In terms of just a couple of examples, the intelligent learning systems, if you think about how they will, I was talking earlier about how there's no such thing as a smart home. There are 28 million smart homes in this country. Imagine when AI is able to intelligently learn on a level of, how you use appliances, what your occupancy patterns are, what your behavior is, not just for water use, but for power use, for home security, for all of those things. AI delivers us the opportunity to create that breakthrough experience that is tailored to everybody's needs, as well as the hardware technology and the sensors and all the rest of it. And the second one is, of course, the data insights that come off that, the aggregated data insights. It might be useful to you, Sophie, to know that you can save a bit on your energy bills by reducing the, how much time you spend, on hot showers, or how many, especially with a young baby, you're doing a lot of laundry right now. I've been through that. Understanding how you're using energy and how you're using water to be more sustainable, to be more responsible consumer, and to save money, during the cost of living crisis. But imagine if you take all of that data up to the aggregated level, that data literally enables us to design better buildings. It enables us to produce better risk management of properties and therefore lower insurance costs. So we're talking to a lot of insurers about how, they're super interested in our technology to help reduce risk. Product design, continuous improvement in product design, features that can be served. We've got an almost endless list of features that we could serve to our customers, the data that machine learning will enable us to innovate faster and better and iterate better than ever before on how we provide services and solutions through our products and through product features to customers. So the evolution of innovation in technology is going to drive everything, including the very buildings that get designed and built in the first place.
Yeah.
Without trying to sound too profound. So it's just it's enormous. So the opportunity is absolutely profound.
Yeah. I think AI is such a fascinating topic because I think most of us, thanks to our influence of sci-fi movies, can kind of grasp-ish the idea of robots and, this rise of the machines thing. But I think much more subtle and nuanced and therefore more difficult to grasp is the idea of AI informing so much of our choice making and presenting us with better options. And I think it's a really fascinating area. It's not, AI doesn't just mean creation, it also means informed judgment of things. And I think that's so fascinating. It's an area that, like you say, that being able to have your home talk to itself doesn't just mean that it's like doing your dishes, like some sort of, I don't know, Beauty and the Beast type scenario, but that instead it's going it's providing you with the information to make better judgment, which comes back to what we've sort of talked about earlier around how the more advanced technology gets, the more it inherently lets us just live our lives without fuss and if it has one job, it does its one job. I'd like to go back to I'd like to go back to the point that you make earlier, because I think it's such a fascinating idea that smart tech, whether or not it's a category. Do you have an example of what informs your thinking around this, that it's a category rather than an industry or such?
Years ago, I'm a huge fan. I need to caveat what I'm about to say. I'm an absolutely huge fan of John Lewis as a retailer. They are, you know, many, many years ago regarded as, you know, one of the nation's favorite department stores, very traditional. If by traditional you mean they provide great service with great product selection and a great shopping experience in stores. They've taken that online in terms of a multi-channel and then an omni-channel proposition and experience, you know, et cetera. And they've been at the absolute forefront of implementing technology into their business. And they're also prepared to take risks. So there's my big old caveat. You know, and they did this amazing, they took a whole floor of the Oxford Street flagship store and turned it into a smart home. They physically built, you know, retail experiences around smart home, because they could see that this was, you know, the next great shift that would disrupt all of the departments, categories or departments, you know, whether you're there shopping for, you know, push chairs and car seats for your young one, or you're there to buy clothes, or you're there in the book department or kitchenware or whatever it might be. They could see that this cut across every category or department or room of the home that they designed. So they devoted a lot of retail space to that, telling that story. And it was a really interesting experiment in, do people actually shop for smart tech? And I think people have spent millions of pounds finding out the answer is no. People shop for a nicer kitchen, cooking, family time, you know, around preparing food in the home. They shop for better downtime and they'll invest in entertainment technology to help them enjoy a film, either on their own or with friends or with their family, you know, to have music light up their lives around the home through multi-room, you know, whether it's Sonos or whatever else around the rest of your home. So, you know, I take my hats off to them for being pioneering and developing that sort of thing. But what we learned from it was you need to embed the smart home story or the smart tech story into every other category. You can't create a category called smart home. You've got to do that. You've got to work harder. You've got to tell the story about how smart tech enables an amazing home entertainment experience or improves the life around your kitchen, you know, both in terms of making life easier, helping you prepare nicer meals, you know, enjoying a family meal, you know, whatever it might be. Yeah. So that's the example I'd give.
Yeah. That's fascinating. So it's almost that we shouldn't be seeing it as a category, but rather an education exercise to encourage people to choose smart features as part of that value adding decision.
Exactly that. Education has been at the heart of this and has been, you know, I said earlier about, you know, the speed at which this technology is adopted is a function not only of the ability to develop the technology. In fact, it's less that, because the technology is already here. It's to convey and educate the benefits, but it's not just that. Education is central, but it's also, you know, the installer and the manufacturer that also needs to be continuously educated. So if I, you know, I thought about this question and I thought, if I was putting together a social media campaign to hawk myself out as a TED talking, you know, guru, you know, what would be on my little graphic that would be on LinkedIn and Facebook? And I'd say there are the following words. You know, it's all about education, interoperability, the user experience, and the service for life that, you know, what the consumer wants to know is, number one, what the hell is it? What does it do for me? Is it going to work? And is it going to work with my other stuff? You know, what's the experience of that going to be like? You know, and, you know, if I pay for this stuff and have it put in my house, is it going to be as easy to get ongoing service and support and maintenance for that as it is for my current boiler or my existing thermostat or, you know, the other stuff in my house? So, yeah, it is about education, but it's not just about educating the consumer. It's, you know, what about the installer? You know, the installer needs to be absolutely confident that he can educate his own customer on this and that he can install with confidence. And the manufacturers themselves need to continuously re-educate themselves, not just on the technology that's available to them, but what the consumer is saying to them about what they like and what they don't like.
Of course. Yeah. And I think part of there's this kind of perception that, oh, is it price that's the issue? Is it this, that, and the other? But I think more often than not, what we sort of hear from consumers is it's not necessarily price that's the blocker of investing in new technology, although that is obviously a factor. More often than not, it's quite often this kind of quite simple fact in that we are often inherently lazy and we have habits, we're set in our ways, and we think, well, what I've got is fine. Why should I change? We make do. Like, okay, yeah, it sounds good, but I'm fine at the moment. How do you convey value to someone who is not set in their ways, but who might think twice before sort of changing their habits?
The technology industry is the only one that I can think of that forces the people that it's trying to sell to or support or serve to learn a new language just to interact with them and to interact with the technology.
Sure.
What the hell? If you go down the high street today and stop 20 people and ask them what HDMI stands for, none of them will be able to tell you. But all of them will know what an HDMI cable does because they've learned the language, right? It's like learning to ask for a beer in Spanish, right? It's like, that just means beer, 4K, what does 4K mean? Bluetooth, what the hell is a Bluetooth? Why is the wireless technology in my house called Bluetooth? You don't need to know, Wi-Fi. What does Wi-Fi mean? Why do I need to know that my router is 2.4 gigahertz? What the heck is a gigahertz? What does it all even mean? So I think my challenge to you is it's not that people are set in their ways. It's just that we don't talk to them in a language that is reasonable for them to understand, which is we need to talk benefit, not tech.
Yes.
So there's two. I mean, there are lots of groups, you know, to group people up and treat them as one sort of, you know, monologous, if that's a word, tribe is oversimplistic. But if I'm guilty of my own charge, you know, if you broadly divide early adopters, there's a fundamental mindset and philosophy difference between early adopters and the rest of us. Okay, and I say us because I count myself in the early mass. But anyway, early adopters are different in the sense that they gain satisfaction from mastering the technology. They like being knowledgeable about it. They like being in control of the technology, and they enjoy being the person in their social group that other people ask for advice about technology.
Yeah, it's quite often a hobby as well for them.
Yeah, so you can absolutely relate to and talk to early adopters by talking tech, because they get it. But when you try to cross that chasm into the rest of us, you know, the rest of the population, it's an absolute, you know, anathema to then try and continue in the same language. You've got to switch into, they shop on benefits, you know. So I don't see people as being set in their ways. You just need to show them what's on offer fulfills a need that they already have in a better way than before. Than what the alternatives are at that point. You win because you say this solves your problem better than what else is available, either traditionally or in terms of other tech that's on the market. You know, one example of this is we absolutely stand out from the crowd. A little mini plug for fear in us for a moment. You know, we absolutely stand out from the crowd because we unashamedly focus on solving the problem, not just indicating that the customer's got a problem. What I mean by that is a lot of our competitors, they put leak sensors or flow detection sensors out there saying, well, we're a leak, you know, detection and therefore prevention technology. But, you know, to quote, if I can just tell you one anecdote for a moment, I was out for dinner, you know, when I joined Hero Labs all those months ago now, I was out for dinner with another friend of mine who is an absolute leader in the technology industry. And I was telling him what Hero Labs did. And without a word, he passed me his phone and showed me the app for another leak detection product that he has on his system at home that his insurance company wanted him to have, yeah, you know, to reduce his insurance premiums. And I said, yeah, that's really great technology, but how far away are you from your house? He said, oh, I don't know, about half an hour. I said, okay, all you've really got on your phone is an app that will ruin your evening because it will tell you that you've got water flowing in your house, but there's nobody home, but you're half an hour away. So by the time you get there, you've either got an absolutely ruined house or your thirsty burglar is long since gone. You know, then what the technology needs to do is solve that problem for you. So we don't apologize for developing a technology that's a fully integrated solution that can actually not only tell you that you've potentially got a leak, but you can then tell it, well, great, shut the water off until I get home and I can just see whether, you know, it's a problem or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my point, is you got to think about what problem are you trying to solve for the customer. And then the education piece that you talk about is absolutely vital to say, you know, we this technology solves your problem in the following way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I know a model that you've talked to me about before, with regards to the sort of people's ability to be open-minded to technology. It's one referenced by one of your favorite authors, Douglas Adams, as you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
Best known for writing The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, a staple on all shelves. His definition of technology and our ability to embrace it is being viewed in three categories. Can you tell me a bit about these and why this model resonates so much for you?
Yeah, I think the point here, and I'm not going to do it justice and I'm not going to read it out. Anybody can Google this. You know, if you look it up, just look up Douglas Adams. I don't know, Google his definition of technology, but the reason it resonates is because, you know, what he talks about is technology is difficult to define, you know, as a single thing, as a single piece, precisely because each of our own experiences with technology are quite specific to the context of our own lives and the stages of the lives that we're in. So, for example, and he describes three kind of stages or, you know, responses in your life to technology, your perception of technology. The first is when you're born, the technology that's already in the fabric of life. So it was mass adopted and integrated into every aspect of our lives, and it's just there. It's in the background doing its job. So for anybody living today, that's telephone wires, electricity pylons, sewage systems, you know, traffic lights, you know, at some level you kind of go, yeah, that's technology, but it's just background, you know, it's just there. You don't regard it as technology.
Yeah.
The next category is anything that came into mass adoption between the age of about 18 and 35, okay? And it's cool and it's sexy and you can probably get a career in it, okay? So for me, that's the internet and smartphones and tablets and laptops.
Mm.
And so if you, with the greatest respect, for you or somebody a generation or so behind me, it's probably social media. And then today, somebody coming straight out of university today is probably all about AI and ChatGPT and those sorts of things. So, you know, for each of us, when we say name a leading technology of the day, different people would probably give different answers to that based on their own interaction. And they are the very generation that make that happen. They're the ones that embrace it, drive it forward into mass adoption. The third is, and this is where Douglas Adams and I slightly depart, but I'll come to that. The third is, you know, after the age of about 55 or so, anything invented after that point is strange and unnatural and has no place in the natural order of things, you know, and that people become resistant. And that's because, you know, they've already established their habits, your point about being set in their ways, etc. The reason why I slightly disagree with that definition is, you know, to take my own mother as an example, a lady who's, you know, holding on to her 70s, you know, she's into the last year or two of her 70s. And yet, you know, in the same telephone conversation, she can blow me away with how she talks about how she uses Zoom to talk to her friends, because where there's a benefit that she can't get out and see her friends as often as she'd like anymore, she can absolutely get her head around technology that enables her to continue having a quality of life and a social connection with people. She knows more about Zoom than I do, but in the same conversation, she'll then say, how do I get the Gmail back on my phone? And I'll say, what? And she's inadvertently deleted the app, and somehow down the phone, I've got to, you know, describe to her. It's like trying to program a computer using a fishing rod. You know, you're down the end of the line saying, okay, what's on the screen now? You know, and you're trying to help. You know, it's the age old story about, you know, helping your elderly parents reprogram the VCR. So, but that's why I love this quote. It's because it comes all the way back to your own personal expectation of technology and the benefit and what you wanted to do. And regardless of age, you need to respect that it's the human experience that's at the center of it that matters, not whether this technology can do something in a bit more of a clever way than the other technology.
Of course.
That's the wrong focus.
Yeah.
That's my point.
And that, I suppose, the pandemic changed so much of that as well for us. And it proved that we're never too old to form new habits. You know, I hate that saying, can't teach an old dog new tricks. You absolutely can. And we saw generations of all ages, because I don't think it's age is a factor, but it's actually about your ability to embrace technology. I'm 35 and I see a bit of new tech and I'm like, oh no, it's not for me. But if we can prove the benefits of technology, people are willing to form new habits. So talking about value, about benefits, let's talk about Hero Labs. Tell me everything about your mission to improve people's lives through smart technology, because it would be remiss of us not to talk about the bigger factors at play here. We're facing not only a cost of living crisis, there's an energy crisis, there's a climate crisis, there's conflict in the world, there's so many things in our brains that mean that the Internet of Things has to work harder just to even earn its place at the table, let alone to be seen as a valued contributor to the conversation. How do you address these issues of people having less expendable money, our need to protect the planet, get down to net zero carbon emissions?
Tell
me about Hero Labs and your mission and how it fits into that context of the wider world.
That's a brilliant question that points to, you know, a manifold and complex global set of, you know, challenges and, you know, things that we need to address. I'll probably give a very, very simple response. Sorry to sound like a stuck record about coming back to my point about showing people the benefit. It's about, you know, exactly that. When costs are rising, incomes are under strain, people are trying to do their best around saving energy, not just, you know, for their pockets, but, you know, for sustainability, you know, you've got to translate how the solution that you're working hard to bring to them and to the world, and it is not just a tech as a luxury option. So, you know, as I say, the brief plug, you know, so Sonic, which is our smart water valve, so named because we utilize ultrasonic technology to extremely accurately measure water flows and therefore detect even the tiniest leaks, etc. I can honestly say, you know, by definition, it reduces costs, it reduces risks, it reduces waste, including not just water, but energy consumption, because one of the largest uses of energy in the home is heating up water for various things. So the two go hand in hand. And therefore it directly addresses carbon footprint, cost of living crisis, sustainability, etc. I'll come to this point again maybe in a little while to talk about, you know, things like the insurance sector, but the UK home insurance claims for water leaks and water damage, non-weather related water damage in the home, is bigger than all fire damage claims and home burglary claims combined.
Wow.
Okay.
For home, just for water leaks. Wow.
That's correct. It's huge. Yeah, the average claim is around approaching £4,000. Now, of course, people pay a hefty excess on that as well, and then the average claims are around £4,000. It's a huge problem, and that doesn't even mention the emotional impact and the quality of life impact it has. If anybody's ever had a flood, it's absolutely disastrous in terms of the cleanup and the impact of, you know, having to sort all of that out afterwards. And yet, 97% of homes have a smoke detector. Quite right, too. Shame about the other 3%. Frankly, that needs fixing.
Yes.
Around 40% of homes now have some kind of video camera, whether it's a smart video doorbell or, you know, a smart camera somewhere, etc. And yet only 7% of homes have any kind of leak detection, smart or otherwise. Yeah. So the biggest impact, the biggest cost to people has the smallest penetration. Because it's not something you think about until it happens to you.
Yeah.
That's the greatest challenge. So, you know, by putting the kind of technology in that we offer, it means it massively reduces your risk of that impact and therefore fewer claims, which means lower costs for you, lower insurance premiums, lower excess, less likelihood that you're going to even make a claim in the first place. Hot water is one of the largest uses of that energy in the home, so it's helping you reduce those bills as well. So it really does sound like it's a cake and eat it moment. You know, it's a triple win for the consumer, for, you know, the planet, for everybody. But it really is. That's why I'm so passionate. That's why I've joined Hero Labs to try and go on this mission. And this is just the beginning. You know, there's a whole bunch of other ways in which our technology can be applied that's obviously in our highly confidential room. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's also a wellness factor as well, which something might not necessarily first think about when you think about your pipes, but there's an element about this around people's health and well-being, right?
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, you could call these kind of almost fringe benefits, but in the process of trying to address the central challenge that I've just described, you know, our product also therefore has flow sensors, it has temperature sensors. You know, we can tell you the ambient temperature of the water, you know, compared to the outside temperature. So that's great for things like freeze alerts. You know, we're able to tell you, look, yeah, there's a risk of because one of the big causes of leaks in the home is that pipes freeze and crack, and then there's a thaw, and hey, presto, you've got a flooded utility room or whatever it might be. So we need to put those sensors in anyway. And of course, we've got pressure sensors as well, so we can tell you what the pressure of the water in your pipe is. All of those sensors enable us to determine the risk of Legionella, for example. So we can signal to property managers, etc., that, you know, if water is not moving, you know, stagnant, you know, if it's not moving for a certain period of time and it's under certain conditions, it's under a certain temperature, it gets up to sort of 20 degrees or so in the summer, then that represents a risk of, you know, Legionella, multiplying of Legionella forming, and that we can signal the risk. You know, another one is we can provide dashboards to, for example, if the property manager is running a residential care home for the elderly, for example, then that data that we're able to provide, all, you know, on a respectful way, on, you know, data privacy laws, all the rest of it, can help carers, for example, identify if there are changes in occupancy or usage patterns. You know, the water that you use to go to the loo to make a cup of tea, it creates a kind of digital footprint, if you like, that's incredibly insightful for people to say, well, you know, if old Major Tom has been up in the night 3 or 4 times, you know, then, you know, to go up to the loo or whatever, then maybe somebody should just go around and check on him, take his temperature, see how he's feeling, do a blood test.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you can pick up things very, very early. I learned this one, by the way, if I could just go on a segue. You know, when I was at Samsung, they created a product called Sleep Sense, which was able to, you know, monitor your sleep, you know, biorhythms and whatnot. You know, in bed, it would be a sensor that would go under your mattress. You know, and we thought, oh, well, that's all very clever tech. But, you know, this thing was able to pick up whether or not you were perhaps experiencing sleep apnea, you know, when you stop breathing in your sleep, which is a classic indicator of heart disease and a risk of heart attacks. So sometimes the data gives you something that's so much richer and deeper than just, oh, you use 200 litres of water today. You know, it goes deeper than that.
Yeah. I mean, I think about some of the elderly relatives. I think I was mentioning before, I am quite involved with a local charity that supports elderly people. And not drinking water, something that you think, oh, you just take for granted, but not drinking water in the summer months. And then the kind of impact on it leading to like kidney illnesses that then make you lose your balance, you fall over, you bash your head. I think it's something we're talking about taking for granted. But actually, if I could know that I could monitor someone that I cared about and say, I can see you haven't had any water, you're telling me you have, I think that would make a huge difference. And I mean, I have to confess, when we first started talking, the idea of something smart, a smart water device, something that just never occurred to me. But actually, of all the gadgets out there, I feel like this is one that I can imagine my family investing in. And it's one of the things I love doing this podcast for this reason, because I believe passionately in finding a platform to share thought leadership around this industry, to inspire people, to create a greater interest that will further engage people with these products, offering a voice to the movers and shakers, because ultimately they're trying to drive innovation for the common good. And that's something that really resonates with me, and I it sounds like it does for you as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is, I think my wrap up to that is, you know, and I'm just repeating what I've said, this is not about smart tech for its own sake or technology as a luxury option. This is about solving very big, very real, very old problems using new solutions. That's all technology is there to do. That's what, for me, the definition of technology is. Yeah.
Well, that leads me very nicely onto my last question for you. It's something that I ask all my guests, because it is something of a little obsession of mine, so permit me this moment. But I'm passionate about the idea of connectivity in every sense of the word. I think if there's a reason that we exist, it is to make connections with one another, with the world around us. What do you see is the role of smart technology to this idea of connection to the world around us?
Hi, Sophie, I think that's a really, really lovely and profound thought to finish on and to carry for the rest of the day. I think my response would be, you know, what does technology exist for? If technology doesn't help us to be more human, to live better, to be closer to each other and more connected, to solve problems, then it's a barrier, not an enabler. Technology should serve us, not the other way around. And earlier you talked about robots. And if you look in the media, you know, the media response to technology, if you broadly carve it into two chunks, is when you're talking about technology putting humans in more control, then the story is about the endless possibilities and opportunities. It's incredibly positive about technology. And the way to scare people is to suggest that the technology is going to remove their control. Yeah, when the human is not in control. So all technology has the power to do great good and potential harm, but we all have the choice in that, you know, at whatever level, whether it's at government level, societal level, individual level, community level, family level, we have to stay in control. And as long as that's the case, then the possibilities are endless.
Yes. Louder for the people in the back. Yes.
Revolution.
Oh, Adam, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been such a pleasure.
Likewise, really enjoyed it, Sophie. Thank you for inviting me.
That's it for another episode. Thank you so much for listening to The Smart Life. If you like what you heard, don't forget to rate and subscribe. Plus, you can catch all our past episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Here at Beacon, we specialise in finding innovative, people-centric ways to bring the world of the smart home to life. Got a story you need help telling? Get in touch with us today. Visit www.beaconagency.co.uk.